Welcome to another episode of Bringing Down the Grindhouse, a podcast where we discuss horror and media, and today, we disobey the Sixth Commandment as we discuss the movie When Evil Lurks. I'm your host, Merck.
And I'm Jonathan, and we are back after, over a year? I think it's been like a year since the last time we released an episode. There's a lot that's happened.
I think it might be two.
No, it was the end of 2022, I think.
Yeah.
And then
we didn't release that one though.
That's right. There was another one that's unreleased. I need to figure that out soon.
So we haven't recorded probably since beginning of 2022.
Right. Well, we've had a bunch of changes. So obviously all the hosts got busy and had to do a bunch of different stuff. Myself, I was involved with school, but I graduated. So I was able to work and get some other stuff going. And then you and Mitch were focused on band stuff.
Yeah, there's been a lot of music stuff between myself and Mitch. I started booking shows down here, playing in a lot of different groups, and ultimately my life has been consumed with music ever since I left initially, and it's just been a big snowball effect, but I'm happy to be back for now.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm going to be having a bunch of different hosts show up while I remain on most or all of the episodes continuing forward from here, now that I have a little bit more free time.
Yeah, the free time opens up a lot more, and obviously we've been radio dead silent for fucking
I think the last episode was the one that Justine and I did on the Edge Runner show, the cyberpunk show that got released on Netflix. But Justine and I have gone separate ways now, and so she's not going to be on as a host anymore for the podcast.
Right. And not only that, but the amount of people who have DM'd and flooded our DMs with people saying they want us to talk about certain movies.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Like, there are people that to this day come up to me and be like, you guys should talk about this. I'm like, I'm not on that podcast anymore.
Or like, visiting guests from now on, I think.
We haven't done anything in quite some time.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to talk about the movie that we're talking about today.
Yeah, so I originally saw this movie as a part of a ongoing list for 2023, considered to be one of the top rated movies that came out. It also came out towards the end of the year in September. So this one was kind of a smaller-ish indie movie. It's not really a mainstream movie. It had its premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival. And so it was part of their like Midnight Madness horror section that they will often include for their festival. But it's an Argentinian-based movie, so it's in Spanish.
Yeah, so make sure you have your subtitles on. We're going to dive really quick into production notes. So When Evil Lurks, obviously, was released in 2023. Most likely filmed probably 2022.
The year before.
It was written and directed by Demian Runga, known for his story in Satanic Hispanics, which was a horror anthology labeled as a supernatural psychological horror film. This movie involves demonic possession.
Yeah, so there was like, it kind of didn't say it a whole lot throughout the film, so they don't exclusively be like, oh, it's a demon. But at some point later on, it does get sort of explained by the mom, who has these sort of rules that she lists out for the movie. But it's so late in the film that you kind of like have to go back and look at what they've been doing since then.
It's kind of wild because they kind of introduce it as like a thing that people know in the area.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, oh, we have procedures. This has happened in the past, but they're very finicky with like the crumbs that they give you.
I'm not surprised by the way that they present it, because for local areas in Latin South America, there is a lot of, it's like folklore stories that show up as explanations for weird and unknown, like unusual things that might happen, which often include illnesses that people don't really understand. So it kind of evolves into these stories where they'll tell other people of demonic possession, which is sort of a misunderstanding of, say, like a disease that might get you while you're living in the country. You don't have any proper medication and things like that.
Right. It also like kind of harkens back to when you would ask, I don't know, if you're in any of these areas as a child.
Yeah.
You'd ask and be like, what is this? And your mom will pull you aside and be like, this is this. She'll give you a quick explanation and you're confused.
Yeah.
And you say, I want more. Tell me more. And she says, no, shut up. Don't talk about it.
I also feel like the director might be a little weirded out by children just in general.
Yeah.
Like he might have some unresolved feelings about how he feels around kids, because this movie includes a lot of graphic content that involves kids.
this movie was up for a good amount of awards coming back down from Toronto Film Festival. The screenplay won the runner-up prize at the Stiges Pitch Box.
Yeah, so that this is a festival where you only pitch ideas and finish screenplays, so it's nothing that's been made yet. Usually the hope is that someone will pick it up and make the movie. In this case, Shudder picked it up, and they worked with another production company, La Puerta Roja, which is a company that's Argentinian and Mexican, so it's a combination of producers who bring some of these films into the United States. So this is Shudder's first Spanish-language film. The rest of the films on Shudder are all in English, so they haven't really gone international yet until this movie, which is a surprise.
Damn.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't know that that was a thing beforehand, well, you know?
Actually, I think you could argue, remember One Cut of the Dead? That's Japanese.
Yeah.
But this is more, we're talking more like South America.
Oh, so they helped produce it. Yeah. Shudder has distributed other international films.
Gotcha.
So as far as like who put money up to make it, Shudder actually put some money in to make it.
Gotcha.
So yeah,
Shudder's
yeah.
backing it.
Yeah, Got yeah. It. So this is one of the few that they've actually put money behind and wanted to make it because of that pitch that he had done for the original screenplay.
As of right now, it holds a 99% score on Rotten Tomatoes?
Yeah, with 97 critics. Well, actually, no, 101 critics. Jesus. So roughly everybody who watched it liked it. And so there's only a few of them that said they didn't like it, but I think maybe they weren't paying attention.
Right.
When you look at the reviews, because they're saying, oh, what about this information? And it's something they said it's, in the movie. Like they explained just, it. Yeah. I think they were confused about the possession and then what demons and stuff were involved. Because the grandma lists off like three or four main demons that are a part of like popular culture.
Yeah. And it gets really yeah. unsettling in that middle. So the name mentioned by those were basically from Abrahamic religions.
Yeah.
Azrael, Baphomet.
Yeah. You'd be familiar. Satan. If you're any part of religion that was Christianity, Catholic, you have heard some of these angel names, but it's often not discussed because it's related to like world ending events and the angels and how all of them get broken down. So like there's the main archangels and then there's the main demons that live in hell. But this was really only explained in certain pieces of literature that like say Dante's Inferno and some of the other stuff really got into. So people don't talk about it too much. And even so, she says it in the movie that even saying some of their names gives them a little bit of power. And so that's sort of a piece that they've included in the film.
It's a part of that thing where if you think about it or you fear about it, it
yeah.
just makes it more powerful.
It's like the Native American folklore story. You don't want to say the name of whatever creature.
Yeah, because then it's coming after you in yeah. the middle of the night. So this movie kind of talks about a little bit of the practice of psychopomp. Briefly, they show a couple of scenes of basically people trying to depart a body that is, in this movie, a vessel.
Yeah. I guess the way that they had created the story was that it's possible for demons to possess a body, and then they're trying to be physically born into our world. And so they will possess a body and make it, like, rot from the inside, basically, until they just pop out.
Yeah, it's kind of like as if a person just became a pimple. It's disgusting.
So it's pretty gross.
And the thing is, if you kill the person with unconventional or normal means, normal like as in shooting or stabbing them, it just makes the thing come out.
Yeah.
So there's a special kind of exorcist style technique to get rid of these things.
Right.
But they go over it more in the film, and they don't. They don't explain it too.
So I think part of it was getting pulled from a few different movies. So one, horror movies like their rules. They want you to know what the rules are, the stakes, and how you could possibly kill something. And in most cases, they are able to get away with it, which is what makes for the campy movies, where it's like, you know the monster, you know how to kill it.
Right.
You follow them using these rules, and then you can see how they finish the movie, which usually means they win in most cases.
Fire bad, water yeah. good for Gremlins.
You know, yeah, right. For the So you end up having these rules that you can follow, and then it's up to them if they want to subvert the idea of these rules or if it's just going to be of no use, like none of it is actually real and it's just pure evil that's going to come out and eat them or kill them.
Right. And I mean, primarily this movie just deals with, I would say, two brothers that are kind of just going through this and watching their town get taken one by one.
Yeah.
Slowly it starts with their neighbors. It moves towards their family.
Yeah. This is also a good way to do a small budget film where that doesn't feel like it's empty. So you know how sometimes they'll do low budget films and you're like, there's like three people in this movie and you feel weird about it because you don't see anyone else.
Right.
In this way, they showed you a rural area that was believable and you're watching it and you get an idea of them moving from one place to another and there's some scope to what they're doing. So this one worked out really well for wherever they filmed it at.
To round out like the main two characters, at least, Ezequiel Rodriguez plays Pedro Yarzulu and Demian Solomon as Jaime Jimmy Yarzulu.
Yeah, his brother.
Or as me and Anthony from our peanut gallery called Luigi.
We were convinced that it was Mario and Luigi because of their outfits. They had like these, it's like a beret. I don't know what to call it. The hat that they was wearing.
Yeah, it's kind of an old school beret.
Yeah.
But with the thick mustache and the green, I was like, okay. And then his brother's wearing a red cardigan. So it was just like every time that we would see something crazy, we'd be like, Mamma mia. It's stupid, but it was making us laugh.
Oh my God. I feel like you guys were making the jokes because it was actually unsettling at some point.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. We're just like, oh, we could put comedy in this and then we won't be as scared.
Yeah. So the movie takes itself very seriously. There's no bit of dark comedy in the movie. It's got to be one of the more serious, unsettling movies we've seen in a while.
I will also note Sylvina Sabater as Mirta. Yeah. She's kind of like the spirit passage kind of woman who's seen this stuff
before. I guess she's an exorcist, technically.
Yeah, right? They have a name for those things.
Well, they said cleaners. Cleaner. Yep. Yeah, that's what it ended up being.
And then eventually you just go and see everything through the family, and then it spirals to the town.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the rest of the cast, they're kind of minor characters.
Yeah.
A lot of people getting killed, a lot of people exploding. I mean, not exploding, but, you know, a lot of people just getting messed up really bad. So I wanted to jump into it immediately and say, what are your first thoughts on this movie?
Well, I'm going to have to spoil it immediately. So this is like, go definitely watch it first and come and talk to us after you feel terrible about watching this movie. Because what, like, you don't see, so one of the things you don't really see in movies is kids getting like brutally murdered.
Right.
It's just, it's considered like a bad thing to do in film because it's like unsavory. Like, don't include certain scenes like that. Which is weird because like they include rape scenes all the time in horror films, like whatever. But if it comes to like a kid getting mauled or something, they're like, whoa, we don't know about this.
It kind of just stayed in the place of grindhouse movies.
Yeah.
Like in Toxic Avenger, when we talked about it.
Yeah, that's right.
Kids get ran over.
Yeah.
And that's because it's someone who's not dealing with the MCAA and he just wants to make whatever he wants.
I don't know if there's like an official rule that says you can't.
Right.
But they're just worried about kids on set. Like, how is this going to be for them?
Right.
And what they had to do, obviously what we saw was like, it's like a doll or whatever the hell they had in there.
Yeah.
But there's, I will spoil this one scene. The girl gets mauled by the dog. Like, it bites her face.
Which, like, we knew something was going to come on with the dog because the dog gets slowly possessed by, you know, taking the essence of the bad spirit from the clothes.
Yeah.
And they pan between.
They kept
adults.
Showing you the dog and the girl like four times over. And we're like, oh, no, something bad is coming.
And immediately just chomps on her face. Like, I would say you could almost argue like whole mouth around head.
Yeah. Well, because it happens so quick and then it cuts away. Like, so like, fuck. You don't see the graphic blood from it, but you know this dog has bitten this girl in the face. And then it cuts back and he's like dragging her body around the house.
Dude,
I haven't been surprised by something like that since we watched The Invisible Man, remake.
Yes.
Remember when she goes upstairs and the face shows up in front of her, like in the attic? That's the last time something got me. I was like, oh, fuck. Like, that scared the shit out of me watching that. So watching this, all of us were like, oh, my fucking God. What the hell just happened?
It kind of, the shit hits the fan kind of moment.
See, how many horror movies have we watched? And there's very little that'll have moments like this where you're like, oh, shit, the fuck?
I will say, like,
unpredictable.
We eventually got desensitized for a good amount of time.
I think that's what it was. I think we had watched so many for a short amount of time that we got desensitized. So after not watching horror films for like a straight 2 years, came back to watch some others. And I was like, okay, maybe I'm a little less desensitized. But that was fucked. Like, that's not a common thing you see in movies.
It took me out of it. Just for a second, I was like, oh, fuck, okay, this director is taking some steps that are different.
Yeah.
My first thoughts on this movie were I was absolutely engulfed in the setting.
Yeah, that brings you in.
The setting was believable, and just you could tell that the characters are unsettled, and if they don't take care of this problem,
yeah,
it's going to spiral. And you could see the look of dread on all their faces.
Yeah. So this is totally rooted in the idea that if, like, if you have any Hispanic friends or older relatives and you ask them about, like, mysticism and things that they might be afraid of, they're very superstitious people. So when it comes to what should I do for this, they always got an answer. There's these rules. Things you have to do to get rid of evil in your house. And most often they'll be what they mentioned in the movie, right? Where they're like, oh, you know, make sure you're not near the dogs. Don't say, or not near animals. That's a thing, yeah. I've heard tons before where they're like, oh, if something is weird, don't hang around pets because they know when something is around and it can get into them really easily.
That's one of these moments where I felt like before characters would walk into rooms, I could hear dogs barking. I was like, yeah, something's up with the dog.
Yeah, because, well, this is also part of the landscape and the creation of, like, your soundscape for film. And for these, they used a lot of what you hear outdoors, which is the sound of the insects, the animals, things that are going on. But this is something you hear in cities and rural areas a lot. So if you don't live in a suburb or in a cul-de-sac, you're going to hear your neighbors, you're going to hear their dogs, all these other things. Signals of what's going on in your neighborhood.
I will say, though, as well, like, the Appalachians, those people.
Oh, God. That's some of the most terrifying stories, yeah, that come out of the Appalachian Mountains, where they're like, oh, if you hear someone screaming, you didn't hear them. You should, yeah, keep going. Don't stop.
They will say that if you hear the crickets stop,
yeah,
and it's just dead silent, there's, right, something fucking there.
It's supposed to be like what's the word? It's like a herald of something showing up. Right. And in most cases, they believe that it will eat the life essence of the area, which includes all the noises that the animals will make.
Yeah.
Which is a creepy thing in itself.
The smallest pitter-patter of a fly's wings, crickets chirping, you know, it's just all completely, yeah, dead silent. Get the fuck out of there.
Which is actually a really old storytelling element. Like, you can find that in very old stories, like the Brothers Grimm had something similar to that. And that's considered to be some of the earliest scary folklore stories. It's like all the German brothers. So if you look up the Brothers Grimm, you'll, right, have some of those original stories. They made Hansel and Gretel, the kind of stories.
Yeah. So I first thoughts, I thought this was,
yeah,
was, well, I liked, stepping in a good direction.
I also like the pacing. So to me, I didn't feel like the movie was too long or too short. And we really only checked how much was left in the movie when we thought the movie was ending.
Yes.
And then there was another ending. So it does give you sort of a false ending, which isn't terrible because it's like you can go with either one. But then it gets worse. It gets worse towards the other ending because it's bleak. There's no happy ending for this movie. And in most cases, this is something people don't really like. But I think it works well for something like this.
It feels worldly.
Yeah.
Like the original ending feels very, like, the scope is large.
Oh, yeah. They also leave it open for a lot of interpretation. Like, is the demon actually born? What happens to the guy? I felt like what happened was it ended up marking him on purpose to be like, ah, this guy, he's not going to die because he brought me out here, even if it wasn't something he wanted to do.
Or he's marked, you know, as the person who brought him.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like a curse mark.
Like, yeah. Like, this is the motherfucker who's responsible, yeah, for the death.
And it's crazy because it's like three or four lines on his forehead that he tries to wash off and he can't get it off. It's like blood is stained into his skin. So it's like you have some small aspects like that that work really well. Although the entirety of the movie is very much about possession, like, right, demonic possession, and then sort of losing the ability to help yourself in most cases. So definitely social commentary.
Yeah.
About, like, the area and what goes on in rural areas, especially with kids.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, a lot of it has to do with what's going on with the food that gets grown there, if you have any access to food at all, and whether or not the pesticides and other things that are grown there will affect your own health. And you often don't get help from the government. So the government's not going to really help you as far as bringing you into the hospital and giving you the right medications. So you're often left with this sickness for a long time, which I think is why they had a real fear of their bodies rotting. In most of the things. So you end up watching this guy bloat up and rot, and they're trying to take care of them, but they also feel like they had these rules, right? Because they're all spiritual.
Right.
And so, like, you can't just get rid of someone.
Yeah. And that was like I'd say that was the catalyst for the beginning of the movie, is that the first cleaner is dead and they go to the house. And
which is crazy. It's like a body cut in half.
Body cut in half, a weird mangled box of trinkets that don't make sense to us.
Yeah,
the brothers, they go onto this little, like, this farm, and they discover a rotted.
he's like alive and rotting, which is supposed to be, I don't know. It's like there's so many different sources for stuff like this for horror films where it's like what happens in a possession. So we know for sure in most cases it takes over, it starts moving your body. But in this case, he was so bloated and filled with like rotting flesh that he couldn't move. So he's just there rotting away on the bed.
Covered in feces and urine. He smells like and incredibly. The sound effects on this one were disturbing enough.
I think they also used nothing but practical effects for most of it. They may have done like one or two for the CGI, but it was very little.
We were yelling in disgust when the stuff came out of his mouth, man. We were like, oh no. It's like a bright mucus green too. So it grossed us out. There was a gross factor for sure.
It's a bit of body horror in that sense where you get to see the grotesque nature of what happens to people.
It's kind of like that last scene on The Fly where Jeff Goldblum is in that complete transformation, puts the gun to his head and says, kill me.
Yeah.
Because that's how it is. This guy is...
The dude says it.
The dude is conscious. He's just a vessel for this demon that's coming out.
Right.
So he's like, he's aware that all this is happening around him. He's been rotting in a bed for over a year.
Yeah. So that idea is not crazy new. Like there's definitely other things where it's like, oh, you want to stop the demon from being born. You have things like where the demon is born in a kid, such as like The Omen and Rosemary's Baby and things like that, where it's like, oh, it has the ability to do that. But in this case, it was like it would jump from person to person if you did the wrong thing. And then people just kept making the wrong choice over and over again.
I'll give it props because I'm used to demonic possession being in a pregnant woman.
Yeah, they always target women in most cases for these. And I think it's because they're supposed to be like the most vulnerable of all of the society is like a woman, children, pregnant.
It's also terrifying because having an unborn child or a born child is already scary enough to be a parent.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, even in this movie, there's a child that was born with autism.
Yeah.
And they make a little bit of commentary on that throughout the film with the demonic possession.
Yeah. I will say it's kind of a weird take on it because it didn't feel like he had autism. It felt like he was physically disabled. Like he couldn't move and talk like he would, but everything in his brain was functioning fine.
Right.
Which is like, I know at certain aspects, autism can affect your motor skills and whatnot, but it seemed to me like they had sort of a misunderstanding of what his specific type of autism was. And then at some point they say it's demonic possession. So it's kind of a weird like play into the movie and how they were using it.
It's very unsettling when he does get possessed.
Yeah, because it's funny because they make it so that he just appears normal. Gets up and walks in, talks to the mom after you've just seen him like he's disabled and cannot move from his chair.
Can't even say a single word.
Yeah, he can't say any. Well, he says like the demon's name at some point or the angel, whatever you want to call it. They use Azrael, which is supposed to be a fallen angel or an angel of death from God. And in a lot of the religious texts and things like that, it's not necessarily an evil entity, but it is like a grim reaper. It'll like guide souls from one place to another.
And the thing is, like when they explain this, you know, he has obvious possession in his hands, but the demon is actually trapped inside of his head because it can't scramble its motor skills.
Yeah. So this was like, I don't think they anticipated that this would be taken funny. Like this is sort of like a dark humor bit.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you probably shouldn't have done something like that. Apart from that, it does feel a little melodramatic at some points, but I think that's just because the actors that they've included are like they're in Spanish speaking shows, which in most cases are dramas and novellas type things, so they're a little more dramatic in their acting, but it's like it's meant to be taken really seriously.
I will say I was unsettled when he finally was acting normal.
Yeah.
And I will say that all the demons are cold. So when they finally get picked up or they're finally taken, they're freezing. They're
oh right.
Even if they're being held by a living person or if they're covered in pelts or furs or like blankets, they're completely frozen. And when he said, "I'm cold. Can we make some hot chocolate?" I was so fucking unsettled, dude.
Yeah, he asked for that, and it's also like they include the idea of people eating each other.
Oh yeah.
Which is like obviously the most extreme thing that'll happen in like a dire situation where food is scarce and you're not sure what to do. So in this case, you have children eating parents, and It's like I'm still convinced that the director has some sort of like internal fear of children and what they might do to you. And at some point even has a line that's included where it's like, oh yeah, evil loves children and children love evil. And it's like, what is the explanation for something like that? I don't know if he meant that like they're more susceptible to things happening to them because they're so open-minded. They're not like guarded about things coming into them, or if it's literal fear of children.
Well, now that you bring it up, it makes me kind of think the whole reason that this infection of the town started was because they dropped the carrier on the way to the dump site because they were trying not to hit a kid.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And they say, stupid fucking kid, get out of the road. Oh, so you could argue in a way that because they swerved off the road not hit the kid was the cause of the entire
problem. Yeah, they don't really explain how the person got sick to begin with, like, or no. How the demon came about, like, into their body in the first place.
This is where that those like context clues and like, I don't know, just little tiny symbolism things kind of like comes into play, but they're very vague about it.
Yeah, well, I think they were vague about it on purpose in this case because it wasn't so much about, oh, there's demons running around everywhere possessing people, as much as it was that people's situation makes them do pretty terrible things in most cases. And in the case of this one, everyone was kind of in it to protect themselves in most cases. Mm-hmm. And there was a misunderstanding of what was going on with each person's situation. Because even the dad was, they only provide a few clues that he was separated from the family because they thought he was a danger to his own children.
Yep.
And then he gets a restraining order put against him. And he's not supposed to be seeing the family. But then he just shows up out of nowhere.
Gets naked
because he thinks the clothes on him are, like, tainted.
They're infected.
So they're is he drunk? Like, what's going on? So nothing looks good about his situation when he shows up. And they keep showing. So this is, like, a main thing that I kept seeing was that people were forced into situations where they look bad. Like, right. You know, like, you go over, like, when they first go over to the lady in the beginning and she's like, oh, yeah, there's a guy coming here to kill my son. And you're like, what are you talking Whoa. About? Like, that's like one. It's like 10 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
That you get this scene. So I think they were really emphasizing, well, what happens when you have no other options? You have to do some pretty terrible shit.
And I mean, even with the neighbor, I mean, the first scene, she finds that one of the goats is demonically possessed.
So that one was the only bit that was a little unclear. So like, I get that it's scary. Like, you know, you get an unsettling animal that keeps staring at you. The goat is used the most because it has weird eyes. And so, and Horns historically too. It's one of the things that represents like Satan. Lucifer, Baphomet, whatever demon you want. And so it's like they included it, but it felt like it didn't match with the rest of their film.
Yeah.
And then they just kill themselves.
Other than the dog, it's the only other animal that's kind of weird.
I guess the way they were trying to show it was that it jumped into the animal, then to the guy, and then to the girl. Or, like, I don't know. It was like,
so they have a rule that you can't use firearms.
Right.
Something about gunpowder probably just doesn't kill the thing.
Yeah.
So, like, I can only imagine that hacking it to pieces, burning it, maybe using a stabbing weapon is probably the best thing for it. So this wife goes to her husband and begs him not to shoot it.
Yeah.
And the goat goes up to the barrel of the gun and basically fucking begs it to die.
That was probably one of the bits of CGI that they used, because they do in fact show a goat's head exploding.
Right.
From the shotgun blast. And you're like, I don't know. They somehow made it where the violence of the movie, which was very like over the top, was not the worst part.
No.
Of the movies. And in fact, you'll get these moments and they don't shock you as much as some of the other bits where you're like, oh, there's like implications of some terrible things happening.
We saw a murder-suicide within the first 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, and yet still not the worst thing that happened. Although I will say that the girl getting mauled is probably one of the worst things I may have seen in movies, and I've seen a lot of fucking movies. And it's just because it's not the way that they show the violence. It's the way that people react to what's going on to that. Because like, how do you respond to a child being attacked by a dog, and which is scary for like any parent?
They're running, they're trying to find solutions,
and then it drags her out of the house.
Oh my god, it takes her blocks.
So it's like it takes her blocks, and then it messes with you, right? Because it's a psychological horror. So you get back and the girl's fine. She's standing there in front of her mom, nothing is wrong with her. But then she tells her mom, oh hey, you're gonna die here, like in the next 10 seconds.
Dad's gonna kill you. He's gonna run his truck into the house and go pow.
And it delivers. You get a fucking scene where the mom and daughter get squashed between a truck.
I wasn't expecting it so fast.
No, it like happens in the next minute or so.
I thought it was going to be our main character.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So I was like, that's what I was expecting when she said dad.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, fuck. He's going to eventually kill this woman at some point. Right. Bam. By the time that thought was over, fucking truck. Yeah,
you don't even really get to process it.
I was like, holy shit.
So this is what they used effectively was they give you an unreliable narrator throughout the entire film, which is the main character, the dad. And then you start seeing other stuff happen, and then you don't understand if it's real, if he's lying, or if there's maybe something wrong with him the entire movie, and we just don't know. And it's like, it could very well be that he's been fucked up since the beginning of the movie, and right. He was the reason why all these things kept happening, and he's like, there's a reason why there is a restraining order.
And, I mean, with all these rules about, like, the demonic possession and stuff, they allude to a lot of it within the story, and it's kind of just like, you question the sanity of our character.
Yeah.
You also question the sanity of the people that are around in this area, because they say the cities are worse because they used artificial light.
Yeah.
But they've only heard of it. They've never seen it in person.
Yeah. So the thing about it, too, is that they mention a lot of things that are talked about a lot when it comes to, say, like people who are ghost hunting. They use modern technology because they think they can look at certain waveforms and that ghosts and other entities can affect electronics because of the plane of existence that they sort of move around on. And that's been like a common theme of modern horror, I think specifically because of movies. I don't think that's really a thing that came about from literature and other things. I think we took it from movies and then made it a thing.
Right.
And
right.
So it then became a sort of a superstition among anybody who was like, oh, you got to stay away from evil, then don't use like electricity. This feels very like she's a witch, you know, kind of like response to things.
Because if you really think about it, like in the olden days, 1800s, 1700s, we don't have electricity yet.
No, they were terrified of electricity. When they first got the idea got introduced, they were like, that doesn't feel natural.
Right.
Because you're like, it's man-made and you're, you know.
And so I could only imagine like an ancient text or scroll being like, no flashlights.
They're not going to deal with certain stuff like that. And then it gets evolved over the years. This is also tied into when they talk about it in the movie. It's very brief, but they talk about how like the church is like dead. Like there's no faith anymore for the people who live there, which is understandable because all this terrible shit happens to you. And you're a part of the church, and then there's no churches anymore. There's not people helping you out anymore. The government doesn't help you. You're not going to really believe in the faith anymore. They're not old school Christians where, like, you know, even the people who came over from Europe to the New World or their New World to the Native Americans, they were extremists. They weren't the original Christians of, like, modern or medieval Europe at that time. These were people they didn't want in the church, so they sent them over across as a punishment.
Right.
So then you had all the fanatics show up and create these ideas that then turned into some crazy superstitious ideas.
Felt they were fighting a holy war.
Yeah, exactly. They ended up feeling like there was only a few people that could handle these things. And in most cases, you have like the Catholic Church who has their like special people for exorcisms. Right. And they make notes of it and records of it to like scare people in a lot of ways. So in this part of the world, in this movie, they've sort of given up on the church. They're not really religious anymore. There's no crosses. No one's praying.
There's only two crosses in the movie.
Yeah.
They're both on women. Right. Not on the moms.
Yeah.
Well, the one that's
they specifically have images of Lady of Guadalupe. They have the Virgin Mary who's there and some of the others. So it's like, it's just that. It's not Jesus or any other like image of God.
I will say I've never seen a depiction of evil where a rosary necklace gets dissolved
in the blood of a demon.
It was just fucking nuts, man.
After the kid chokes up the hair and necklace of his grandma that he ends up eating, which is the kid we mentioned earlier who has autism in the movie. He gets possessed and then eats his grandma along with the other kid.
Correct.
Who showed up too and decided to just eat her too. He didn't look like he was possessed.
He said that in the beginning of the movie, like basically a throwaway line, because he's been hiding in the barn this entire time, that he felt something take over him.
Yeah.
And he said that he felt that he needed to protect his brother.
Yeah.
And he killed the first cleaner.
Yeah, that's
and then
right.
He did exactly what he did to his mother, which happened to his grandmother.
Yeah.
The other character's grandmother.
So the mom from the first house they went to, she died too.
She got eaten by that kid.
Oh, okay. Shit. I missed that bit.
Yep.
So, okay. Yeah. So they really took care of everybody in the fucking movie. Everyone you saw was pretty much dead except for him and his brother.
Now, I'd say the halfway point is where we get introduced to kind of like our shaman-esque Gandalf kind of character.
She's sick. So this made me think a lot of the Insidious movies.
Yes.
Where you have the woman who is an expert and helps them fight all the possessions or the hauntings, more like it in Insidious.
Right, right.
Yeah, they go into like the different realm and then fucking fight it. But she has that expertise.
I love an elder woman that just knows the shit and like lives on the fringes of society.
She was hard as fuck in this movie, though.
Oh, dude, she was tough.
She was tough.
She's like, your kid's dead. Get the fuck over it. Let's go. Let's go.
Yeah, that was wild. So they list out these rules, right?
Right.
What the heck do we make of these rules? There's seven of them, they say. Do we remember all of them?
The first one is to not use artificial light.
Yeah.
Which we could chalk up to modern storytelling.
Right, yeah. People were scared of technology. So it turned into that. You know, they had the thing where you don't say the names.
Correct.
Which is more, there's so many cultures that have that.
Right.
So that's old. Like, obviously, you think of it, you get scared of it, it gives it power, it comes into existence.
Don't trust animals, which is also in that same
vein. Dude, so many Hispanic people say stuff like this, where they're like, oh, if your animal's freaking out, there's something wrong. Like, you don't want your pets to be freaking out. Nope. The same with people. If your pet doesn't like someone, they think that's a symbol of like, oh, that's not a good person.
It reminds me of when we saw The Witch and The Lamb. Oh, I mean, God, there's a lot of
The Witch is great because like it's that. Like a slow burn horror where it reveals that the devil was with them the entire time.
Yeah.
In the goat. Yeah. Who was notoriously fucking terrible on set too. He was like a legit terror to most people.
He gored Ralph Ennis legit.
Oh my fucking God.
Like not just in the take, but he had to go to the fucking hospital. So.
Right.
The animal thing.
Yeah.
I think it's the other one. Don't be afraid to die.
Yeah, so that
that's the last
one. That was the most important and the final one, where she's like, oh, if you're going to fight these things, you can't be afraid to die.
You can't be afraid in general also.
And also can't be afraid in general, which is probably like the toughest one, right? Because you end up having this idea of, oh, if you display what you're scared of, it's going to use that against you.
So she even kind of dwells into her backstory on the ride over slightly because our main character, I'm going to call him Mario because he's in red. He's, you know, obviously his son got taken from his now possessed demonic wife and they're chasing after it. And she said, this is your fault because you're afraid that she was going to get the kids. But then she also stops and she looks out on the road and said, maybe this is my fault because I was afraid that they're going to take
my
husband.
That was such a good moment because it gives another perspective of what the film could have been about, which is like not their story. She may have been the reason.
Right.
And her hiding out there finally brought her out. They did all that just to get her, which right. I believe would happen.
Yeah.
And in most cases, it'll go to great lengths to get somebody because it's just that petty.
She said, we'll go to areas unknown, completely uncharted, just to start a new life, just for it to catch up again.
Oh, totally. And it's like, she was sort of like running away from everything, right? So it's like, this is sort of the thing that gets mentioned all the way through. And so this leads to, oh, is she maybe responsible? And it does get her towards the end there. When she even says it too, she's like, don't leave me alone here. Like, why the hell are you going
to
fucking leave?
They constantly lie to you.
Yeah.
And that was the thing. They were utilizing the children in like the last third of the movie, I would say. Because basically they're like, oh, the not the cleaner, but the rotted is what they're calling it.
Yeah.
Is on this side of the hill. It's over there down that road. Another kid is like, don't believe him. He's lying. It's on this side of the road. The chick looks past these lies and is just like, if they're trying to get us the fuck away from here, then the rotting creature is here.
Yeah.
And then we find out that the entire town's adult population has been killed by these demonically possessed children. And they're in the floorboards of a school.
So it very much gives the vibes of like, oh, this is some...
Children of the Corn.
Well, for sure, Children of the Corn. But Children of the Corn was like, it was fun.
Yeah.
For them to do it. Like whatever possessed them was enjoying the thrill of chasing people and killing them.
Right.
And the kids liked it too. Like that was part of why they grabbed these kids because there's something wrong with them to start.
Right.
And in most cases, that's what scared. I think that person for sure was like, I'm terrified of children. So they made that movie And it's because, I don't know, kids say weird shit to you sometimes. Like, if you've ever been around little kids for a good amount of time, they'll just say off-the-wall stuff, and you're like, what?
They don't lie either.
Most of the time. Yeah. They won't lie to you. So in this case, they're having a lot of truth come out from the kids when they're telling you stuff. But they're also in a position where they can't help themselves because outside influences always affect what's going on with them. So in this case, whatever was the most powerful influence, which was the demonic possession, took all of them. And it even went to a school to like bring all of them there and hide the bodies. And that's where it was like, oh, we'll just get the thing born here. And that one was the scariest bit.
I think what's wild is you have the hammer there and you have a giant floorboard of a school to go through to get this rotted. And then they're lying to him saying, hey, there's an axe in the next room over. It's just in the red case.
Yeah.
And she's telling our main character, don't go over there.
Yeah.
Don't go over there. They're lying to you. Listen to me. While she's setting up this MacGyver kind of device that looks old timey, a little bit of Latin
influence. It looked like it was going to get like pushed into the back of the neck to do something, but they don't explain anything about it.
And it doesn't, I mean, the guy doesn't know how it works.
No.
So the seeker knows how it works because she's a fucking seeker.
Yeah. They have very little in-story lore about the cleaners and how they do their jobs, but it's like a job that you can have if you know how to do all these things. They even mention some of his notes, which have writing on it that doesn't look familiar to them. Even when you look at it like closely, it just looks like scribbles in most cases. But that's a little bit of like world building they included in it, which worked well for it.
And at the end of that point, I mean, we saw Hammer smash face. I could finally do. We have seen Cannibal Corpse Hammer smash face.
The only thing that was sort of confusing to me is that when he gets into the school, it seems like he's not himself. Like, he doesn't do the things that you've seen him do earlier in the film to the point where I'm like, are you that stupid? Like, why would you leave her alone?
We also went over the fact that he hit a fucking kid.
Yeah, so this is why I could see why people might be sort of like concerned about the filming of something like this. Because say for like the Babadook, which we talked about before, the yelling scenes when they're yelling at a kid, they're not actually yelling at the kid. They're yelling at a stand-in, some dude who's just like on his knees or sitting.
Taking it.
Do you know? Yeah, he's just taking the yelling. Because obviously you can't yell at a kid on set because you're going to fucking traumatize them. So it's like, how do you then shoot a scene where it does look like a kid was on the ground pretending to get hit?
We were joking because we're like, look at these possessed kids, I would just beat the shit out of them. And then the dude proceeds to beat the shit out of
him. He hits her with the car door, jumps on her, smacks her 3 times, and asks her why she's lying. And you're like, oh fuck, this is like for sure something they did for this movie. Even if they got a stunt double, you have to find someone who's small enough for something like that. So it's like, it's a whole other thing that gets brought in. So you're like, but yeah, the whole story surrounds the idea of how children are going to respond in these situations and then the parents dealing with them. This feels like a lot of anxiety about parenthood, too. Like, how are you going to deal with children who sort of are out of your control or things that might happen to them that are out of your control? What happens when your child is born with a disease or if they're born with certain disabilities or things like that? You can't do anything to change it.
I got a lot of anxiety during the arguing scenes between the parents when they go to the wife's house. I felt like, no matter what, she was screaming to this guy. It was, hey, get your things, we're going.
Yeah.
And then when they finally leave and he's like trying to say, oh, we're going to get apple ice cream. And they're like, we have no money. I was like, this feels real.
Oh, yeah, because it introduces the idea of things that happen with families, but in a different setting, right? Sure. So you can most likely run into a situation where a parent is getting their kids for the day or something. Divorced family, you're getting your kids for the day, and that parent just doesn't have a lot of money. So you then have to go through the anxiety of, oh, what am I going to get them? Just like a thing of ice cream. Not even like a full meal in some cases. So you have these things showing up for him where he's probably not really a good parent. What's the only thing he knew about his kids? That they like the apple ice cream.
Right.
Like, he didn't really know much else about them. He hasn't been there for like 4 years.
He even forgot the autistic kid's medication.
Yeah.
It's a lot of stuff.
So it's like he ends up being, they show him as like not the best person. In a lot of ways, things are sort of his fault.
Yeah.
And it solidifies it at the end when it's like, oh yeah, he just leaves her alone. When you've been together for the last how long? So that part felt like, it was annoying, I think, in some ways, because you're like, why would you just leave her? But they wanted to really get at the fact that he was the one who's doing it and he was making bad choices through the whole movie.
It also doesn't help that the whole movie, I mean, a good part of the movie, he's trying to save his two kids.
Yeah.
And both of them get demonically possessed. But one does not get possessed. One gets fucking eaten.
Yeah, this is what I'm talking about. These are not even the most memorable bits. The mom passes by while eating the kids' brains.
Like it's a bag of popcorn.
Just digging. Like, her arm is, like, elbow deep in the brain and just pulls out a chunk and eats it. And you're like, what the fuck?
And the brother ends up just fucking running them both over.
Yeah, so it's like there's so many things that show up here, and yet you're still unsettled by the regular things that are happening for their family because they built the tension up so much for these.
And, like, when we paused the movie because we thought the original ending was happening, when the birth of the actual demon takes place and he marks the guy and he goes off into the sunset, I was like, either they do two things here. Either they do a fuck no kind of thing and they fight back.
Yeah, they actually close it off and send it back to wherever it came from.
Or we go into the black-pilled kind of, like, this... the world is fucked now because of you.
Yeah, which is kind of where they went, I think, with that.
And I really dig that.
Well, yeah, so in most cases, people want what they consider to be a satisfying ending, which is that they win, and, you know, there's nothing happens. Because this is what Insidious does. In most cases for those films, they fight the evil, they get away, and then they move on. And then it comes back, and then they have to fight it again. That's why there's, like, six of those movies. But correct. It's like, you know... But if you watch most of other stuff, like, that includes stuff like this, say The Babadook. The Babadook doesn't have a happy ending. They have to live with it after that. It's still in the basement. She still feeds it at the end of that movie.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of just live with it.
Yeah.
Kind of. But that was the thing about that movie. She learns to live with the trauma.
Well, yeah. So hers was definitely about her own trauma and, like, her despair of losing her husband, having to deal with just being alone and dealing with her own child, who is also a little bit unhinged. But it's like... that's the sort of thing that they had a metaphor for their feelings about it. So I think in this case, for the entirety of the movie, this is a lot of social commentary about the anxiety of how the community feels about what's going on in their country, what's going on for people growing stuff, pesticides, not good food, the lack of resources, the government not helping.
The livelihoods of their future.
You know, all in
the livelihoods.
How do they feel
children.
About their kids? Yeah, yes. Their kids are not doing well. They have no future. This is why they're upset about the church not helping. There's no faith. So, like, it's very bleak. Yeah. All the way through.
And that's the thing. Like, most people argue that religion is kind of like a concept made for people to have hope.
Right.
If you get rid of religion, there's no hope.
Yeah, this is sort of the thing. Well, yeah, because
like that tongue-in-cheek
Hispanic people are very religious as a thing. But that's mostly because of, colonialism and bringing in other religions. Prior to that, there was,
generations of being taught this.
Oh, totally. So now you have the anxieties that sort of show up. I think it may show up for the creator, the director, as in, like, this is a community he grew up in. Mm-hmm. The guy's from Buenos Aires in Argentina, so this is, like, in certain places it's not the best place to live, and there's a lot of things that happen that sort of go unnoticed.
I mean, if you really look into certain companies, I don't want to, like, go too far on a tangent, but certain companies will do certain things for certain resources to sell as goods.
Yeah, Coca-Cola.
I
think it's, like, the biggest one.
Dole bananas.
Straight up funded an armed revolution.
Like, Nestle cocoa.
Yeah.
Nestle milk.
Yeah.
You look into that stuff real carefully.
Yeah. Which isn't even, like, a conspiracy theory. Like, they actually did these
there's
things.
Legal, there's, or still there's legal doing cases. It now, yeah. There's a reason why they put a stamp of this is certified not slave labor chocolate kind of stuff.
Oh,
now.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just people of a less fortunate thing that have resources get taken advantage of and the government does nothing to assist them.
Yeah. And so in most cases, they have to figure out a way to help themselves, but then sometimes they can't.
And if you don't have the church either. Yeah. Oh, dude.
Yeah. And so, you know, yeah. So in most other movies, right, you get someone who is religious and they help in that way. They're like a professional exorcist or something.
I'm actually kind of happy that this movie didn't have a holy person in it.
Me too. Yeah. So in a lot of ways, it departs from, the original Exorcist. It has a priest show up. They try to exorcise it. But it's not the same as, say, like, what's the one with Keanu Reeves? I immediately thought of John Wick, but it's not John Wick.
It's not John Wick. He also, Constantine.
So the Constantine is the other vibe of that, right?
Constantine is new metal, like this movie. Yeah, essentially. So
this one I think is meant to be attached to a lot of real things that are going on in the world and a lot of anxieties that might show up. We've talked about it several, like how many hundreds of episodes, where most horror you'll find is social anxiety, people's fears that come through, and then they make it real through whatever you're watching. In this case, it was a lot to do with your own body, a lot with control, and a lot of things that were out of your control, so things that might happen to you. And then because of your association to someone, they might put you into a situation like that too.
I give it points for a small cast.
Yeah, well done for like five people, I think. Yeah. Like four or five people who are really the main bulk of the cast.
I fuck with a story that doesn't go to a government institution, and it takes the control into the character's hands.
Yeah. Oh, right. They even go to, so they prove the point further by going to the cops, and the cops are like, we're not dealing with this. We sent someone
like a year ago.
Yeah, like we're not dealing with this shit right now. And it's like proof that they don't really want to be involved. And so what was cool was that it kept showing up in an unpredictable way where you would end up watching it. I couldn't really predict what was going to happen at any point during the film, which is hard to do for horror films, because they have sort of these storylines they follow through to the conclusion of like what's going to happen for certain things like that. So was the ending satisfying then for you?
I am a sucker for an ending that ends and makes me feel like shit.
Yeah, fair. Yeah.
Ever since I had that experience in that movie theater where the guy told me he had the pass and he watches every movie that comes out. And he told me sometimes movies just end on a bad note. And we watched Upgrade.
Yeah.
And at the end of Upgrade, he got up out of his seat and said, well, there's another one. And he just walked away. And we're like, we were in our chairs stunned at this ending of Upgrade. And we're like, fuck, that sucked. That was bleak.
Yeah.
And he's like, there's another one for the tally, boys. And we're like, fuck. God. So I'm cool with, I like a big, it reminds me of The Thing. The ending of The Thing. Where, you know, you have, what's his name, McCreary and Keith Davidson. Yeah. They're like, either we get free or one of the fucking things destroys us and it consumes the rest of the world. Fuck it, let's drink some whiskey over it. Yeah. That's one of my favorite endings of all time.
Well, yeah, because it's essentially proving that, like, it's still there.
Right.
It's alive.
And so it's, the thing is,
continuing evil.
In the movie of The Thing, you predict that it gets the person that it takes from that helicopter, and it consumes the world.
Oh, yeah.
And so in this, evil incarnate, whatever you want to name it, has been born and walks into a fucking sunset.
It does feel like a new evil entity. It doesn't feel like something that existed before. Like it found a way in, and it was through the children, through a pregnant woman, through like whatever, or like this bloated man. And it kept jumping back and forth, and it finally gets out. Nothing feels more bleak than the marking of the guy.
Yeah.
Because almost any evil that you look at in literature and popular culture, there's a herald of that brings about certain things.
That was it.
And he's that. So, like, he's sort of cursed forever for that.
I also fuck with an ending where a guy is screaming, and they cut the music and they cut the sound.
Just in anguish over what's happened.
So
yeah.
I like this ending.
Yeah, I think it works well for what you were already watching. I think it would be disingenuous to create a happy ending after you saw so much fucked up shit happen to them and their family.
I would not want to see a sequel to this.
No, it should be just sort of a standalone thing. I don't think he does sequels really anyway. Okay. So I think he'll just continue on with another story.
Well, I think the lore that they present is very interesting. And it makes me want to know. Like, we could talk all day and be like, hey, give me a fucking Netflix series, 10 episodes. Who the fuck are the cleaners?
Yes.
How does the rotted work?
I think you would risk the...
It takes away from it.
It would take away from it, because then you would get the ideal of like, oh, the cleaners are pretty cool. Like,
right.
They end up being these sort of heroic characters in that way. When like a lot of the time when you talk to them or you see them in the films, they don't like being a cleaner. The way they got into it is usually because they lost someone close to them, and they figured out a way to get rid of it and want to stop it from other things. So it's like a thing you don't really want to be doing. It's like when you talk to somebody who does a government job that's not very happy. You know, it's weird, it's crazy, because they had a lot of allusions to like what it's like to deal with children who go through, say, like the adoption system in the United States. To be a social worker is a very hard job to do, whether or not it's actually helping a lot of people. You have to deal with broken families and then children getting moved from back and forth, and you broken are often homes. The one to do it.
Yeah.
So it's like, how do you deal with certain jobs like this? It's never a good thing to feel about these. And that's the vibe it gives, where it's like, none of this is going to be a good thing for anybody.
It's bleak.
Yeah. So it's like that ending works out really well. Was there any scenes that were then your favorite, or just one?
So most likely my favorite scene was when the autistic kid comes in normally.
Yeah, because
he has a speech impediment. He has a movement impediment. He can't. he is somewhat a vegetable in the movie.
Yeah, he doesn't really do much.
It wouldn't surprise me if he had a wheelchair. You know what I mean?
He seems to be able to walk a bit, right? When he's like in the house.
So him coming into the house, talking normal to his grandma for the first time, and the look of terror on her face because he's been alive for, I don't know, give it like 15 years or so.
Yeah.
Has never had a normal occurrence in his life.
Yeah.
And the demon finally pulsed through his fucking body.
Yeah, yeah.
And into his mind completely. And it was able to be like, hey, what's up?
Yeah.
I want some fucking hot chocolate.
Hot chocolate eats the grandma. It's like, oh, shit.
It's bleak.
I think some of the scariest bits they included was the stuff you didn't see.
Mm.
So, like, having the kid throw up hair and the necklace seems somehow worse than if you showed a graphic scene of him eating her.
Right.
It gives it's like this is the subtlety that they try to use with certain horror films. But the thing is that they include it. Pretty violent stuff anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, how did you manage to make those more unsettling than the actual violence you saw in the movie?
I'm also very satisfied with watching the guy give up and hit the rotted with the telescope.
Right, yeah, because you expect him to like figure it out. Right. Like he's going to get the thing and put it together.
He just, it's out of frustration. Just
because they even broke it apart too. The kids, you show all the pieces on the ground and it's all broken.
I think that was my favorite part. I also have to give points to the soundtrack.
Yeah.
I thought the sound design for noises were amazing.
Did it have music? Because
it had acoustic guitars.
Okay. I didn't feel like it had a lot. Like I feel like it was very little. Most of it was a soundscape that they sort of made for the film.
When it does have music, it does fill the void pretty well. Yeah. But ending the credit scene on like a crazy ass new metal song.
Oh, right. Yeah. I don't know what that was.
That was the one thing I was like, this is wild, dude. But yeah, that was my favorite scene. Do you have a rating?
Well, for me, I'll get to the rating in just a second.
Yeah, yeah.
The favorite scene is the dog. There's like maybe five or six times where I've been legitimately surprised and or scared like that for when a movie does something. And it's a literal jump scare. So it's like, you know when they're usually coming, right? And in this case, I wasn't expecting the dog to just bite her in the face.
We were not expecting the violence.
Maybe it would like bite her hand or something. Or like she'd be like, ah, and like kind of freak out and she's still... there. No, the dude freaking bites her face and then drags her dead body around the house. And you're like, oh, fuck. And so it's like there's some moments like these in these movies where they completely go past your expectations and scare the fuck out of you. And that's one of them. That one, there's the one in Hereditary where the mom just lights on fire.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck is happening? Similar, same movie. Girl gets her head fucking destroyed by a telephone pole.
Jesus.
So it's like, you know, things like that will end up like sticking with you and they scare the shit out of you in most cases. So it's like, that's one of them. And that's completely threw me off when we were watching it to the point where I was like, oh man, like this is like something else because you don't see stuff like that in other films. They really did not pull any punches for something like that and instead chose to show you that. But then they show you that she's okay afterwards. So they really fuck with you while you're watching.
Yeah. Oh, also that phone call.
Yeah, where it's not the demon, it's the demon calling him to be like, you're a fuck up, like you're a terrible dad, there's a reason why I cheated on you, like everything terrible you can tell someone when they're like in this bad situation, especially to the parent. So yeah, the movie for me, I feel like it's like a 9 out of 10.
I was gonna say 9.5
only because some of it felt melodramatic at some points. I wasn't sure about the acting for most parts of it just because it felt like they had gone a little bit too over the top if they wanted to maintain the groundedness of a real story.
I'll say that the mom is most likely a soap opera character.
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty sure she's in some Spanish TV shows.
Right.
But that's not to say that, like, that doesn't work for certain elements of the film because you already know it's going to be different. Also, Spanish by nature, whenever people are freaking out, it sounds dramatic. So yeah. It's like there's no changing the fact that it's going to sound much different than when people speak English in horror films and it's like a difference. It's why certain other international films get you. It's why Japanese, Korean films, Chinese films, they're all a little bit scarier in some senses because their fear translates through the language and the filter of the subtitles. So you kind of don't understand in some ways, but in other ways you're getting an interpretation that's your own because you're reading the subtitles and what's going on. Also, the subtitles aren't always like a direct translation of what they say. It sort of gives you the vibe of what
dubs
is,
and subs will, you know, always be our enemy because we've watched certain movies where a character will say something like along the lines of, oh, burn this down, make sure to not leave anything remain. And then the subtitle will be like, hey, throw this thing on fire.
You know what I mean? It's very shortened. It's a shortened version of it. Because I feel like there's a lot of moments where they were saying specific things that should have been put into the translation. So it's like, if you don't know Spanish, it'll be like, it's all right. But if you know Spanish, you'll hear bits of it. And you're like, that doesn't feel like
the right translation. Argentina, is that, they speak Chilean, right?
No, they speak Spanish in most of the country. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it's a little like, different, a little bit of a different dialect slightly.
Definitely a different dialect. It'll sound different if you're used to Mexican Spanish.
Gotcha.
And it's because each area has certain words that they use for well-known items. So like this one felt, I remember watching it and I was like, this feels different than what I'm used to, because I'll watch stuff from Mexico and it sounds a certain way. It sounds like my family, because my family's Mexican and Guatemalan, so you get that sort of Spanish. But obviously you have to watch it with the subtitles unless you feel like you just, you know, Spanish enough to watch it. And yeah, you got it. I watch everything with subtitles anyway, so it's like, it's worth it. But yeah, I'd say it's a good one. Go watch it. Definitely be prepared for some like very bleak story, but it's worth the rating. I think people rated it correctly, and a lot of audience members really liked it. It unsettled a lot of people.
And in a time where we get movies like Scream 6,
and still haven't seen it. I need to watch the new one.
Very, I don't know, very manufactured and corporate kind of just cash-ins for horror.
Oh, yeah.
More and more often than before. Like, before we would bring it up, we probably would get like 2 or 3 remakes a year.
Yeah.
We're getting tons now.
Well, I would guess that's most of it has to do with the strike. For the writers, so they're trying to recycle shit.
It's nice and refreshing to see Shudder take on an international project. Put money behind it. That project being fucking phenomenal and making me uncomfortable.
Yeah, which is good. I think it also is good that we had a break
from
watching horror films, because I typically will watch like drama and sci-fi action type stuff, and then the horror stuff is really where a lot of the analysis will happen. So this is a good one to come back to.
So When Evil Lurks.
Yes, When Evil Lurks.
Check it out.
Yeah, and it should be available on Shudder, because that's like the one that produced it. So wherever you can stream stuff, Shudder, and I want to say one of the other streaming sites, but I'm not too sure right now. But you could just Google it and find it.
So real quick, we're kind of just getting back into the groove of things.
Yeah.
You are mostly.
I have no idea what the schedule is going to be like.
Yes.
You may get one next week. You may get another one in a month.
So what I propose, instead of giving you the average here, go check out our links and all that, what I'll say is, after we post this and we announce it on Instagram and our social medias, comment movies that you have seen within the last couple years.
Oh, sure, yeah.
That you would like to see our takes on. Yeah. There's been a lot of movies that we've missed. And there's been a lot of stuff that people have brought up to us in our daily lives because we just haven't done the podcast as much.
Yeah.
And so we are interested in seeing what people want to hear us talk about.
Yeah. Very easy to find. Go to Google, type in Bringing Down the Grindhouse. Literally every single link on that first page is us.
Yep.
So you can go to our we can go to our podcast Instagram. You can go to any of the streaming sites, which is literally any of them. So anywhere you find podcasts, you can find this podcast. There's 140 or so episodes that are already out, and this will be like the 141st or 42nd. Yep. So go and check them out. They're in no special order. They're each about their own individual movie. In some cases, it's two, because we started out with a grindhouse style where it was, we had two feature films that we talked about. In these recent ones, we have a lot of just a single movie because there's more to analyze in them. We're choosing stuff that's got a little more meat to it. Although we do talk about certain B-list horror movies and we love watching stuff like that. It's what the name was made from.
Yeah, we have that's the thing with horror. We have our bread and butter. We have our stuff that makes us think. We have the stuff that just makes us happy.
Yeah. Stuff you enjoy watching with friends, with people, because it's like a slasher film. You're watching it to see people escape, that kind of thing.
Obviously, Basket Case is not going to have the same seminal impact as The Babadook, but we talked about both of those movies anyways.
We did talk about both of them. And then we have our non-horror episodes, which we'll probably do soon-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah, and figure out a film. I'm sure at some point we'll also be talking about the Godzilla movie.
Yes, I think that is one that
Godzilla minus one.
Want to talk about for sure.
It'll be a good one. So check out all those. Leave any comments and feedback. If you really enjoy that. But I think that is pretty much everything.
Yeah, thank you for having me over.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to Bringing Down the Fucking Grindhouse.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening.